When did self-care become another burden on your to-do list? Picture Erin, a mother of three who rises at 5 a.m. and works late into the night, desperately wondering when she's supposed to find time for bubble baths and meditation. The cruel irony of modern wellness culture is that it's become yet another source of guilt and inadequacy for women already stretched to their limits. We're right to feel insulted that the supposed solution to our exhaustion is a $20 bath bomb. This commodified version of self-care bears little resemblance to its radical roots in the 1970s, when the Black Panther Party promoted it as a way for Black Americans to preserve their humanity against systemic racism. As Audre Lorde powerfully stated, "Caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare." Why do we keep falling for empty wellness promises? The answer lies in three powerful seductions: escape, achievement, and optimization. The allure of the wellness retreat with its pre-planned schedule provides temporary relief from life's difficult decisions. For others, like Sharon, a laid-off journalist, self-care becomes another achievement metric, obsessively documenting yoga poses, tracking running times, and judging herself against internal measuring sticks. Then there's the optimization trap that keeps women like Anita, a small business owner and mother of three, constantly researching time hacks and outsourcing solutions in the elusive pursuit of perfect control. The whispered promise that one more gadget or scheduling secret will transform our lives is a fallacy. We never arrive because we're chasing the wrong solution. What women experience isn't simply burnout, it's societal betrayal. This distinction matters because burnout places blame on individuals for not being resilient enough, while betrayal points directly to broken social structures. Women are systematically conditioned to prioritize others' needs over their own, carrying the invisible mental load of anticipating, planning, and monitoring household needs. Research confirms this inequality. Working women are twice as likely to manage households and three times more likely to manage children's schedules than male partners. We're trapped in what sociologist Martha Beck calls an unsolvable problem. Be selfless, yet ambitious, devoted to family, yet always available for work. Women have become society's scapegoats, tasked with reconciling our culture's irreconcilable contradictions. Real self-care isn't a life hack. It's a verb, an ongoing internal process requiring self-knowledge, self-compassion, and difficult decisions. Unlike hedonic well-being, focused on immediate pleasure, eudaimonic well-being connects us to deeper meaning and purpose through living in alignment with personal values. Research shows this approach correlates with improved health outcomes, including better sleep, increased lifespan, reduced inflammation, and stronger immune function. The four principles that guide authentic self-care are setting boundaries with others, changing how you talk to yourself, bringing in what matters most to you, and using your power for good. These principles work synergistically. As you strengthen one area, the others naturally improve. The key is viewing self-care as an integrated practice rather than isolated actions. Setting boundaries is where real self-care begins. Without them, none of the other work can happen. My mentor once gave me revolutionary advice: you don't have to answer your phone. This contradicted my medical training to always be available. The boundary was in the pause, that space where I could choose my response rather than react immediately. The first challenge in setting boundaries is learning to put guilt in the background. Many women struggle with guilt tolerance when establishing boundaries, feeling responsible for others' emotions. The goal isn't eliminating guilt, but rather turning down its volume so it doesn't control decisions. The second challenge is silencing the killjoys, those voices that make us worry about what people will say. When setting boundaries, remember you have three options: say yes, say no, or negotiate. Taking time to consider all options is itself a boundary. Unlike the treat yourself mentality of faux self-care, true self-compassion focuses on your relationship with your mind through psychological flexibility. A major barrier is what I call martyr mode, when you care for everyone else until you're completely depleted, yet paradoxically take pride in your suffering. Women receive tremendous social approval for self-sacrifice, creating a perverse satisfaction in saving the day while making ourselves smaller. This mindset creates a competition of suffering. You worked 50 hours? Well, I keep a sleeping bag under my desk. One powerful practice is to notice when your inner critic is being cruel. When my patient Sonia berated herself for using childcare on a weekend, my immediate response was, ouch, helping her recognize how harshly she was speaking to herself. The antidote to shame is remembering you are good enough, acknowledging your humanity, and extending the same generosity to yourself that you offer others. Real self-care connects you with your values and engages you in activities aligned with them. Unlike goals, tangible objectives like running a marathon, values are desired qualities of action, how we approach our journey. Values become clearest when framed as choosing one quality over another. For my patient Cleo, renovating her kitchen revealed a conflict between conforming to conventional design and expressing her authentic self. Despite pressure to have a proper kitchen, she ultimately chose boldness and authenticity over prudence, selecting a bright blue island and patterned tiles that reflected her true taste. Making such clear, values-based choices is energizing. At life's crossroads, you must choose a path guided by internal values, not external validation. Trying to pursue too many directions simultaneously leads to burnout, where neither path fulfills you. Systems of oppression function by convincing us we're powerless against them. Our essential work is to reframe our narratives around power, maintaining our agency to create change. Individual and systemic change form a positive feedback loop. A system only changes after a critical mass of individuals show up differently. My patient Lena, a video producer at an exploitative TV station, initially believed she had no power to change her terrible working conditions. By implementing real self-care practices, setting boundaries against all-nighters, taking needed sick days, practicing self-compassion, she gradually transformed both her situation and her workplace, securing an assistant and inspiring policy changes that benefited other producers. Real self-care naturally evolves into community care, using your power to benefit others. This isn't just idealism. It's how marginalized communities have survived for centuries through neighborhood libraries, shared childcare, and mutual aid networks. The revolution begins within, a radical practice of reclaiming power from systems that profit from women's insecurities and exhaustion. When enough of us internalize authentic self-care, the tide shifts, awakening our collective power to demand and create meaningful change. This is how movements are born, when personal healing catalyzes social transformation. Real self-care naturally evolves into community care, using your power to benefit others. In 2021, women past childbearing age mobilized for paid parental leave, fighting for future parents despite no personal benefit. This exemplifies community care, which marginalized groups have long practiced through neighborhood libraries, shared childcare, and mutual aid networks. During COVID-19, these networks emerged as neighbors helped elderly residents with essentials. As Angela Garbez notes, community requires decentering yourself, sometimes giving rather than receiving. My journey began with disillusionment in psychiatry, where women were diagnosed with anxiety and depression while actually responding normally to abnormal circumstances, crushing schedules, violence, poverty, and discrimination. My patients increasingly recognize they aren't broken. Our social fabric needs repair. Women working multiple jobs for childcare aren't failing at work-life balance. They're surviving in a system not designed for them. Real self-care means holding hope and pain together while maintaining ourselves amid pressure to surrender. It means acknowledging both personal agency and systemic barriers. While faux self-care keeps us treading water, real self-care becomes our life raft, awakening our collective power for meaningful change. This is how movements begin, when personal healing catalyzes social transformation.